Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, my name!
Hey, my name!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get
beat,
beat!
We get beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you. Great to have you on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt, Husker, NFLer Jay Moore is back from Augusta. TJ Henning, hope you're doing okay. A busy one. Husker baseball stays hot. We'll catch up with the Pride of Lincoln Pius the 10th, Jake Schleppenbach in Hour 2. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment, Shuey, in about 30 minutes and, well, longer than that, 40 minutes of football starts now as we do on Wednesdays. Bird, good to see you again. What do you know?
Not much. It's good to be back. Good to be back in here.
You didn't get drug off any flights.
No, but I wanted to, I want to direct some people from Delta around. Boy, they pissed me off something fierce. You guys, you didn't even, if you follow me on Twitter, obviously it was a dumpster fire of a situation with Delta. You know, if you're trying to fly pretty much anywhere on Delta between probably still last Wednesday to now, you're delayed, canceled. I mean, my flight from Atlanta to Lincoln was canceled, so I had to fly into Des Moines.
Did that make you cry flying into Iowa?
A little bit. You know, I can only say this is the first time I was ever looking forward to landing in Des Moines, or being in Iowa, because I was just ready to get home. Otherwise, they're telling me I couldn't get out till, Sunday afternoon. That's when they can guarantee me a flight. You're like, well, you can fly standby. I'm like, oh, my God. You know,
I would have found a way to stay in Augusta.
Well, obviously, that'd be nice. But, I've been by myself, no rental car, it was a bad situation. So yeah, I mean, land in Des Moines at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then luckily I have an awesome dad that he drove to Des Moines to pick me up because I couldn't get a rental car.
Really?
You know, it's only 2 hours from Omaha.
Okay.
But it's like, well, otherwise I don't have to get
it. So he drove to get you at 1 AM?
Yeah, he left Omaha like at 11 o'clock.
Wow.
My roommate was stuck in Atlanta airport for 7 hours because he flew from Lincoln to Atlanta and he was supposed to go to Charleston.
Yeah.
But just
you weren't getting out.
Here's the most important question, and I haven't flown for a while.
Mm-hmm.
What are airport beers at right now?
When I was stuck, so I was
just like, I don't drink alcohol. I don't know.
No,
I actually flew from Charleston to Atlanta to Lincoln. My flight was delayed for like 6 hours in Charleston. I mean, luckily, there was a nice bar there, and I was able to watch golf. Two big Coors Lights cost me $16. So it was like being at a baseball game.
Okay. All right.
And they were double what they were at Augusta, that's for sure.
That doesn't make any sense,
right. But
you're right. Well, let's talk some spring football, Bird, and get into it. Yesterday was practice number 13, practice 14 tomorrow, and the all-important 15th practice, the spring game on Saturday. We're going to open up and talk some spring football thoughts. Coach Diaco, what is Saturday about? How much weight is put in this, going to be 70,000, it sounds like, and growing to see and watch on Saturday? Is it more important than the other 14 practices? Here's Disco Bob.
I would say that no, in the word audition. To me, they're not auditioning for me. We're all on the team together. We're all in the family together. So, I mean, they're like not trying out to be in Cats on Broadway, They're not auditioning. They maybe you might consider it a dress rehearsal. A dress rehearsal might be a better way to describe it if we're doing Broadway terms.
Okay, I haven't seen Cats. I have yet to see a Broadway show. Let's be straight. I have never been to New York City. But from an audition standpoint, Bird, did you feel like the spring game was a last statement opportunity? When they tell me this, and they've told us till we're blue in the face all spring long, that it's a cumulative thing. They're looking at every practice, those we see, those we don't see. They see it all. And they're going to put all of those practices together to come out with the grade you get, where you're at, how you leave them. in spring. I'm anxious to see how guys respond to that stage. How do they play with 65, 70, 75,000 watching them versus those that stuck around, 300 people when the coaches' convention was going on, or the high school coaching clinic was going on, or even 50 to 70 media members? 70,000, how do you react in that situation? That's what I'm interested in seeing with, and not even Tanner or Patrick O'Brien. It'll be Patrick's second spring game. It'll at least played in front of big crowds before. I want to see how Jebbia does. I mean, that's down the road, but that's kind of what I'm interested in. How do your second and third team guys do, and what kind of depth are you going to have?
Yeah, I don't put much stock into the spring game. I mean, how many times have we have these stars of spring games that don't ever amount to anything?
Well, Jamal Turner,
right.
Chris Butler.
There's a lot. I mean,
Bobby Newcomb. Newcomb was pretty good.
Yeah, he was. You know, and I agree. It's a cumulative thing. It's a dress rehearsal. I think it'd be more important. It just depends on how they're going to structure it. If it's good on good, one versus ones, two versus twos. Listen,
they won't.
Yeah, that's the thing. If they did that, maybe, but still, it's usually first D versus second offense because they want to make the starters, you know, they want to have some control a little bit. Yes. You know, they want to have some sort of control over it. And honestly, more weight's probably if you wanted to say that second team tight end or whatever, or the second team quarterback, whoever it may be, looks good against the ones, you might be able to put some stock into that. But you're not gonna put a lot. I agree. Practice 1 through 14 or 13. Usually your 14th when you're not doing much anyways to get ready for the game. But what you've done over that time frame, what have you done in that period where it is a grind. You know, spring ball is not fun. Spring ball for players is spring ball is not an enjoyable process. So it's the guys that suck it up, take on that necessary evil that is spring ball and get through it, do what they're told, be coachable, approach with the right technique, do the things that Diaco and Bray and Perella are asking of them, and play well during those practices. I think that definitely outweighs one practice in front of 70,000, without a doubt.
So, Jay, you say spring ball is not enjoyable for the players, which I understand. But let's say you're making a transition to the 3-4 defense like they are. When you made your transition from the 4-3 to the 3-4, you kind of enjoyed that, right? Like you saw the things that the 3-4 brought. Are any chance that these players are kind of enjoying learning this new defense under Bob?
I mean, they might, but it still sucks.
Okay.
Spring ball, there's no easy way. There's no other way to put it. Spring ball is awful. it's not fun.
How do you really feel?
No, if there's a former player that's out there that says they enjoy spring ball, they are full of it. There's no way. I mean, they might, you know, I find that hard to believe. I mean, it's just a grind. You know, it's 3 to 4 practices a week. You got scrimmages, and you're going against teammates. It's, in a way, some guys look, it's not pointless, but in a way, it's kind of, It's just monotonous. It's a grind. Then you have to turn around. You get a few months off. And you do it again for like another 3 weeks. Really, you have more practices in 2-a-days or training camp against the one offense. It just gets old going against the same players and just doing the same things over and over again. It's so much more enjoyable, obviously, when you get to play another team in a game. But it's not enjoyable. I think the fans obviously get a kick out of seeing it in the media, and it gives us something to talk about. But from a player's perspective,
move on.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like it's spring ball. And honestly, I mean, I can remember guys who would not play very well during spring ball because they don't care. Honestly, but they were never threatened for their position though either. So they're like, some guys had, you know, they played well.
As
a junior in the season. They get the spring ball. They're like, I don't want to get hurt.
Sure. No, there's other concerns.
All right.
I think there's enough urgency right now that I think some guys have been put on notice.
Well, without a doubt.
I think guys have been put on notice with the position changes. I'm talking at center. Mm-hmm. I'm talking at guard. You better be locked in and care. I honestly believe there's been some movement to get your five best on the field offensive line wise. Mm-hmm. I think there's some guys who, if they don't kick it into gear and start caring or snap out of it, whatever you want to say, they could lose their spot.
Without a doubt. I mean, that's the thing is, when I'm talking about guys who just kind of got through spring ball. Those were guys who were comfortably in. It's like a veteran, like a 10-year vet that knows he's not going anywhere.
You tell him, okay, so like a Mo or somebody like that, they're not losing their job.
Right, exactly. I mean, they're never.
Not to name names.
Right, but if it's different, though, if there's a competition going on at the O-line spot, at whatever it may be, it's a fight. And, I mean, you can. I never approached it like that because I felt like you start doing that, you get a chance to get hurt, you get worse, you get bad habits, I could never approach it like that.
You didn't ever feel safe, did you?
I don't think I was. They ever made us help, really allowed us to feel safe. I think they always, I had Barry Turner behind me. I knew he was a very good player, but I always approach every day to get better.
Sure.
Whether it's a very small, minute thing, but if I got better at that one small thing and just keep building on it, find something, that was always my focus of the day, was just to find one thing, my stance, my get off, my first step, my hand placement, whatever it may be. Do that, my alignment, do that better each day. But some people, they just didn't think that way. I mean, it's just. But some guys were also more gifted than I was, and they could get away with certain things. Mm-hmm. I had to work at it. You can take it six ways, one way, half a dozen the other. In my opinion. So,
question about fighting and Saturday. I haven't talked to you in a week. So, Riley went nuts, like flat out ballistic nuts for Coach Riley. His tone, his voice level. The whites of his eyes. I mean, he lost his mind on a scrum. Mm-hmm. It was a fight. It wasn't brutal. It didn't last extensively. But you had, juniors to be not stop the fight between two freshmen. What's your take on that? If you're a junior or a senior, should you stop the action or let's get it on. This sucks.
Well, I think
because you can go one way or the other on fights in practice.
Right. I don't.
It's dangerous. It's silly. I mean, Riley was pissed, furious. I've not seen him ever lose his mind. I saw it for the first time in my life, and he was all over a couple of guys. And instead of stopping it from a leadership perspective, was his angle. You not only enabled it, but joined the party. Mm-hmm. And he was upset about that. And to me, I kind of go, yeah. But, I mean, guys would start fights to kind of get things cranked up a bit. Mm-hmm. It just depends on who you're listening to. Fights are evil, fights are bad, or no, man, we needed something to kind of go.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think fights are – guys are competing. They're getting after it. They're getting pissed. I mean, that's – I don't hate it.
And Riley said the fights stemmed from trash talking throughout.
Well, that's good. That's guys compete. I have no problem. I want to see guys, getting after each other. Honestly, in fights, you go in there and break it up, but your first deal is to back up. If you're a D lineman getting a fight with the O lineman, you better go back up your buddy. You back up your D lineman first.
Yeah, no, and I think that's
first, and then
I think that's
then,
what happened,
and then yeah, well, that's great. That's what should happen. Yeah. I have no problem with that. But I know
I didn't have a great view,
right? But coaches think it is a waste of time. It's now we just lost 5 minutes. And granted, we've been in fights before where stop and you have to run a couple gassers, run some stadium stairs because like the whole team got into a fight. That's happened a couple times before, but
who started them?
Well, you want to name it, Richie when he was incognito here. I mean, but it happens all.
Stupid question.
Right, yeah, it happens. I mean, it's going to happen. At the highest level, it happens. fights break out.
Not Richie.
Right. But no problem with it, whatsoever. I mean, I think that's kind of good and it's healthy. But it does get things crazy. I mean, especially when you're kind of at this time frame of spring ball, it's getting old. It's getting towards the end of it. Guys are ready for it to be over. But also, guys are trying to fight for the position, and they get pissed a little bit because a guy is holding them or doing something, maybe gave him a little cheap shot, whatever. Hey, fight for yourself. If you don't like it, tell him about it. If he said you do it one more time, you're going to get this, this hand where you don't want it, and or something. And
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Squeeze and twist.
Yeah, you got to fight for, stand up for yourself. No problem with that.
Right on. There we go. Keyword, be listening for that around 5 o'clock. The 125K Moneyball is going on with ESPN. The keyword, the next keyword announcement, 5 o'clock. And when you hear that keyword, can text 77000 for your chance at $1,000. Moneyball opportunities throughout the day here on ESPN, 7, 9, 1, 3, and 5 o'clock. So be listening for that key word. Jake Schleppenbach coming up. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey will be with us shortly. And you're welcome to tap the line. And that's brought to you by your friends at Schilling Bridge, Cork, and Tap House. Numbers to get in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. And just to put a wrap on this, is this end-all, be-all of practices? Is Saturday huge? Is it massive? Is it important? It's what you're going to get a chance to see as a fan. And it's what BTN's going to show. But I think last Saturday was telling that there was a better run game. Way better than two Saturdays ago where their run game was non-existent. So the offense is getting better, getting more balanced.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, who backed up, Jay? Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
15 minutes away, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart, Shuey. His thoughts on the Masters with Jay Moore, who just got back from the Masters. Jake Schleppenbach, Husker Baseball, in 1 hour. So one thing that's also been kind of an accumulation is now you're 15 practices in as a player, and maybe it took just one practice, maybe it took five. I doubt it's taken all 15. But you kind of now know what you get with Bob Diaco mm-hmm. as your defensive coordinator from an accountability standpoint, how he kind of runs, how he directs traffic, so to speak. And there are expectations now that are much different than a year ago when you had a different coordinator. Guys, if they haven't, will need to adjust. Jay, that's a very real thing. And I think overall, can you say you're going to see maybe a more focused, dedicated football team?
I could say, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable saying that. I think just
that's peers holding peers accountable, but that's also your coordinator in the grill of those leaders.
I think that's maybe the one thing I understand where Riley comes from and saying, I need my players to step in and be accountable, hold other players accountable. I get that, but that's to a certain point, to an extent. I mean, these are very young kids, yet it's hard for them to do that. I mean, it's almost, you can't let the inmates run the insane asylum mm-hmm. a little bit, And I think to an extent, it was just hearing some things that were going on, guys weren't held as accountable. I couldn't believe some of the things I was hearing. Guys, not coming to team meals on the road or even like, I'm just like, what? You guys are allowed.
So guys weren't going to team meals.
Yeah.
You guys missing workouts
guys
pretty regularly.
Missing workouts, having excuses that they miss workouts, being late to meetings with
this
no excuses.
Defensive side of the ball.
Both. And for everyone. I mean, I was absolutely shocked. I'm like, what? You didn't have to go to team dinners you could miss? Guys were just going to like. You were able to, where your hotel was, they just walked across the street to go get something to eat. I'm like, that is how is that even possible? I'm just thinking back.
Go do what you want, bed checks, midnight.
Correct. I just find that very odd. I mean, I look back to my time with Callahan or even, that's how you kind of do things in NFL.
Sure.
You have your meetings, but hey, you want to go see some people here, you're grown men. if you don't want to do it, fine, we'll find you $25,000, do what you want to do. But I just think there's got to be a consistent, you're on time. You're in your seat. But there's things like that. You know, you give young kids. You know, I hate to sound like get off my lawn old guy, but
you're not 34 yet. You're fine.
Well, I will be this year, but
yeah, you're still young.
Yeah,
you're good.
But you know, you give a, you know, an inch, and all of a sudden it turns into a foot, and all of a sudden it turns into a couple feet, and they start to doing a little more. And
it's a lot of trust,
right? You see, what else you get away with?
Your kids are mature,
exactly. But I can't. I mean. But when Diaco got here, it changed. Like a guy missed a workout, and Diaco saw that kid walk by his office. Diaco pulled him in his office and said, "Never, ever again. If you want it, you can do it, but you're never playing ever again."
Really?
Yeah, but that's the way it should be.
No, I get that, but it's all sorts of folks that make the world go around with your culture,
mm-hmm.
and culturally. You had a new coach that's not going into year three, and his style has been more pro style.
Laissez-faire, kind of.
Yeah, like players coach, get the job done. I'm going to let you do your job. I'm going to trust you to do your job. It's the attitude of, here's where the water's at. You come get a drink if you want,
mm-hmm.
versus I'm physically taking you to where the trough is, so you drink.
Right.
It's hands off. It's NFL pro style, where you let people entrust people to do their jobs. And in college,
but it also be NFL. You're dealing with 53 players on the road, 46.
Sure. No, I'm not blasting him.
It's still 53.
I'm saying
this
is how it was early at Nebraska.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Where it's hands off, and even with some of his assistants. It's hands off, do your job, and oops, you weren't doing your job. So guess what? You're not here as a coordinator, as a defensive line coach, mm-hmm. as a special teams coach. That's your repercussion. Didn't get the job done. It's black, it's white, you're gone. And you have two different guys in now. You have different personalities, but you needed we talked about this the other day with basketball. You know, what type of personalities do you have on the assistants, and are they different than your head coach's personality? You can have a calm communicator that's really professorial as your head football coach. Mm-hmm. But, man, you need some bulldogs on your staff to get in somebody's chili if they're not doing their job.
Right.
And you got a guy in Perella now going into year two. And you certainly got a guy in Diaco that, based on what you just told me, some dude missed a workout, was called into Diaco's office, riot act red. And there's a new sheriff in town.
Correct. I mean, but I was just dumbfounded by that. I'm like, what? I mean, if we weren't in our seats like 2 minutes to 3 minutes,
and people,
or 5 minutes
people
before,
get on Callahan for being this guy doesn't get Nebraska and pro style mentality, and I'm a Bill Walsh guy. And I mean, you know, all the
yes.
arrows flung at
yeah,
Billy.
Yeah, I
C,
mean, I know,
but he still treated you guys like kids versus the pro.
Oh,
game.
For sure, like. Yeah, you were late. I mean, 5 minutes was on 5 minutes early was on time.
Sure.
You never in 1,000 years would I've ever thought about missing a workout just because I'm just not going to go today. That's just
he'd hear about it and let you know.
Oh, you hear about it and you're going to pay. You are going to pay and you're going to be 100% sure you're never going to miss another workout again because that was the worst thing you've ever been put through. I'm talking climbing for an hour straight holding a 45-pound plate over your head.
Really?
Does that sound fun?
Well, maybe. I'm kidding. No,
You know, does that sound great? No, that sounds absolutely terrible. You know, that's just crazy to me. I don't know. But you look at, I look at teams that are very successful nowadays. You look at Alabama. Saban's the biggest
control freak. Yeah.
Dabo. I don't know Dabo, but I guarantee you he has a hard set. I mean, to me, he seems.
I think Dabo's got some German shepherds that work under him.
Correct.
Yeah.
I would firmly agree. You look at
Jimbo's psycho.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a complimentary
right.
way because he's got his staff's really good.
Yeah. I just don't. I if I'm a head coach in college football, I couldn't be that relaxed. I couldn't do it. You can't. So when you have your kid's on the field, and you have to have them be perfect to, you know, almost to that tenth degree on what they're doing. How can they be held to those standards? If it's cool, to, you know, if you're able to, you know, you can miss team meals, you can show up late, you can miss workouts.
You don't care.
It's not going to equate, man. That does not two plus two in that situation is not equaling four. That makes zero sense to me. So it's just those little things like that. And that's why I like what Diaco's doing. I think that's why there's been a little bit of, and it's kind of like, whoa, it's been kind of eye awakening for some of these kids and maybe some of these coaches. They're like, okay, not useless, but it has to, in my opinion, it has to be that way. It's got to be a consistent. You got to be on top of it, man. It all stems down, man. It's a little thing. Honestly, it's very military-like, mm-hmm. but I think it has to be that way. If you want to stop getting your ass kicked at Columbus and at Wisconsin and wherever else, you got to do those small things right. Otherwise, those inconsistent games, that's what happens when you're allowed to kind of go do your own little
same
thing.
Same page.
Yes. You know, it has to, that's what happens.
Now, I hear you on that. The beauty of it, though, and here's the other side of the leadership structure and culture. We got into the culture talk, which, good. Mm-hmm. I like that. And I think the culture that Diaco has been a part of and can bring is big time. It's needed. It's a different personality. It's a damn it, I'm going to say it, put a dollar in the jar, energetic personality, okay? but you needed that.
Mm-hmm. You need the juice.
And the defense is picking up on it.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to have the juice. This team needs to be held to accountability to higher standards.
Well, they need to prove that they can handle it before they're given a chance to prove it.
Right, but you should – I'm just saying, but you need to – like, you need to – listen, you
– you need to be the parent.
Right, well, you have to say, okay, yeah, you know – you're operating at a B level, but B's aren't good enough.
Sure,
we need A's.
Sure.
And you might think, I know he's probably a B student, but damn it, you're going to be an A student, and I'm going to do my best to make sure you get there. And if it's, I'm taking every ounce of my power to make sure you're I'm going to yell at you, I'm going to hug you, I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do to make sure you're getting an A student, even though you're probably a B student, but I'm going to do my best to make sure you're an A. And if you don't like it, tough deal, because this is what's best for you.
So you want them to be the A, they get the B+, and they're better than the B.
Correct. Correct. Higher standards got to be held, man.
No, but I think that's what's happened with his hiring. And I think, obviously, I'm going to include Perella in on this. Mm-hmm. And I think from a teaching standpoint, I mean, I really like Bray. Mm-hmm. And now you have a new, entirely new secondary setup.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's part of that work in progress, the defense and – what you're watching for, even though don't read too much into it on Saturday. But culturally, you needed, from a personality standpoint, as new as this staff is, you needed a bit of a shake-up.
Right. Well, and I'm not saying it needs to be like no fun team.
I think they can mix it.
No, you have to be able to have the fun, but the attention to detail. But if you take care of those small things, But you know that I have my kids are on time. They're going to class. They're not missing these things. I don't have to stay on them. And then you go out to practice, and it's always going to transfer. It's going to transfer over. The accountability is going to be there, and you can have a little more fun. And then you're not so uptight because you don't have Diaco on your behind all the time. Why is so-and-so doing this? Why is he doing this? You know, why is he missing class? Why is he doing this? Why is he late? And you can finally relax, and you can coach better and not worry about Diaco ripping you all the time.
Well,
so.
And you mentioned the transfer part where, not player, no panic needed, but where as a junior or a senior, you're going to pay it forward to the younger crowd, and you're also going to hold them accountable. So his hands-on approach will always be there, and depending on team makeup can be applied. But some years you're going to have, you know, a Peter and Wistrom. Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully you have that type of that leadership
right
within the locker room, mm-hmm. where the peers are leading the group.
Correct.
Versus the coach. But you need a coach monitoring the situation. Wilderness Ridge Golf coming up.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Jake Schleppenbach, Husker Baseball at 525. Wilderness Ridge Golf segment right now. Mike Shewhart. Shuey is in. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Log on. Get a tee time booked. Maybe before Easter service, if you're not doing sunrise. Or after. All right. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. 402-434-5106. Or even before the spring game.
Then, or I'm sure they're having a killer Easter brunch, too, out there.
Well, I was getting to that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm going to crawl. I'm going to get to the Easter brunch. I've done that before.
No, it's good.
You crawl out after that.
Oh, it's wonderful. I go beach. I just go beach somewhere. I do it on the 18th. There's some drunk guy named Schmidt in the sand again. No, I'm kidding. Don't sick him on me. Membership benefits, membership pricing, of course. PGA professional Chris Thompson and director of instruction Mike Shewhart. Shuey, how are you, man?
I'm good, man.
We're not as good as Jay Moore here, are we?
No, I'm a little jealous, man.
Getting down to Augusta.
Yeah.
You've been a few times,
so I know what it's all about, man. Right. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it felt like walking into, honestly, like Disney World. I hated Disney World as a kid. I thought it was overrated. I was a Universal Studios kid. See, we went to Universal Studios, then Disney. I'm like, this sucks. Like, let's go back to Universal Studios. Who cares about this stuff? I want, like, roller coasters and
I don't know,
like, Jaws rides and things like that.
To this day, I'm sad that my father had to take us to Disneyland. Is that down in Florida?
Yeah. Disneyland's California. Disney World.
Disney World.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to Wally World, and he told me it wasn't real.
Park's closed, folks. Who saw French and told you?
He owes us. F&A, he owes us.
So. No, it was crazy. I mean, I don't know when you were down there last in 90.
I went 97 and 2001, I think.
They have the new north entrance. Like, you walk in. Uh-uh. Well, because they didn't have the new practice facility done. That opened in 2010, so I think that was finally done. I mean, you walk in. I mean, it's crazy. It's just how nice the grass is.
Yeah.
But it's just pristine. Like, even walking in, you felt bad because it was wet, you know, Tuesday and Thursday were there, obviously because of the storms. But there was a couple times I had to bend down and actually pick off blades of grass because I thought I was standing on field turf.
Yeah, it's you can't describe it until you're there because it's not real. It's like it's not real. It's like right out of a picture, out of a book or something that's generated. It's like, man, this can't be real.
No, it was great. I mean, we spent 12 hours there. We got there at 7:30 and left at 7:30. Watched some practice. I mean, I want to know how many miles I walked on Tuesday because we rarely sat. We just walked all over.
That's awesome.
We just walked all over and I had to see everything. And we kind of sat around a little bit on Thursday, you know, one green, one of those first groups come through. But standing by, you know, those benches by 13 green and 14 tee, that's a good spot. And 11 and 12, that's a great spot.
Yeah.
Watch guys tee off on 18, you know, watch Ernie and Duffner and Bern Wiesberger tee off, you know, on that one.
How about that tee shot?
Oh, boy. You got to win, whip, and hard 20 off the backside, you know. Whoosh.
You're trying to hit it down.
Ernie damn near hit it into 10.
Yeah.
He only made bogey. He was playing good. But, yeah, we watched that one. That was just, I mean.
That opening's about as big as a bowling alley, man.
No, it is.
It is narrow and for a long ways out there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. No, it was, man, I didn't want to leave. Didn't want to leave at all. But it was cool. I mean, it was just, besides traveling home. That was a nightmare, but I mean, Paul Azinger stayed at our hotel.
Cool.
Was able, you know, didn't really get a chance to talk to him. He was just hanging out, having a couple cocktails down, and he was doing some work. I don't think he works for ESPN anymore, so he was doing some work for someone else, radio wise. But and you couldn't ask for a better trip. Able to play a little golf, so it was awesome.
What'd you guys think of the playoff? What'd you think of Sergio?
I was really happy. You know, I mean, it's
his rep's been kind of maligned, and it's kind of bounced back and. What do the pros say about him, and how do you think the pros feel? I mean, just the ones.
I think they're all super happy because, again, you never want to be one of those guys that's the best player to never win a major, and that's that he basically was. I mean, he was probably the best player that has not won a major yet, and, you know, he was so close so many times, and, you know, he's not getting any younger, obviously, and it's like, and his putter's a little suspect at times, so it's like, man, you know, I doubt the guy's ever going to win one. So to finally break through, I mean, it's pretty exciting. And the guys, I mean, they're really happy for him. You know, both those guys, you couldn't go wrong with either one. Justin Rose is a super guy. you know, but I think deep down a lot of guys were rooting for Sergio because, you know, it's like his time is coming to an end if he's ever going to win one. And it's like, how many times and how close can he get so many times to not, you know? So, no, I was happy for him. I was rooting for him.
Yeah. The way he bounced back, though, it was kind of shocking to see him hit some amazing shots after kind of the what looked like the traditional debacle.
Yeah, you know, that was – and again, that's kind of how – you have to win, you know. You got to position yourself, first of all. You know, you play well enough to put yourself in position. You know, sometimes you do that and you don't put yourself in position. He happened to get himself in position. And you need some key moments in a round that allow that to happen. And that up and down he made on 13 after it looked like he was going the wrong way, I mean, that was huge, you know, to keep him at least feeling like he was still somewhat in the game. You know, because again, as a player, you kind of know what's available out there. So it's like, oh man, he made a great par there, but he still had 15, which was an eagle possibility, you know, and some other holes that if he hit some good shots in there. So it's like that thing was so key for him to at least give him that little glimpse of hope that if he actually hit a couple, and he did, you know, man, he hit an unbelievable shot on 14, then he backed it up, hit an unbelievable shot on 15. You know, and put him right
stuffed
in the game.
Stuffed it on 16, just had a tough putt. I mean,
yeah.
No other. I mean, for a righty, that downhill left to right putt. Ooh, that's a tough putt to hit, especially knowing it could get away from you. But I was just the guy played 10 horrible all week, makes a bogey in 11, pars 12. But yeah, 13. I almost sent out a tweet. I'm like, he's ejected. Dude's done. But makes that. But that's the you make that. Round that saver that keeps you in it, and you nailed it on the head. And obviously, Eagles 15. But what was crazy for me is on Tuesday, we're at the practice round. We're standing behind two green, and watching kind of players come down. You're like, God, who is that from a distance? You're like, because some guys like Patrick Reed went out by himself, and then Sergio was on his practice round by himself. So he's coming down two. I'm like, oh, that's Sergio. Let's watch him hit. Hits in, and you know they put those discs down to mark the holes where they're going to be. And he was kind of short right, but that pin on day one is that back left on that finger. So he hit like probably like five or six chips from short right to that back left pin. And I'm just kind of sitting there. He's hitting good chips, and the caddy's kind of throwing them back to him. I'm like, I guarantee you, no one is picking him to win this week. I said in my head, I said to Scott that was the guy I was with that Shoe knows really well, and I said there's no one's picking him to win this week. And we're like, yeah.
Except Schaefer.
Right, exactly. But honestly, no one. I mean, the guy, plays well in Ryder Cups, but you don't really hear, he's not really does much. You don't know. You know, he played decent in the match play this year, but you just are like, but you got to be happy for the guy.
Yeah, super happy. And it's not the most logical choice for him to win because it's a putting.
Correct.
Course. I mean, you got to putt your ball there.
Man, that's what TV, you see the undulation, but those greens are bananas. That's what the TV does not do, is show the undulation on 14 and 7. So, those are, boy.
That's one of the cool things. Like, you watch it on TV a lot,
right?
And then you get to see it in person. So it'd be like, what was the biggest difference that you thought on TV, but when you saw it in person,
it's like, greens. Wait, the greens by far.
You can't even describe them.
More of the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart continues on Hail Varsity.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Winding down hour one, Jake Schleppenbach, Husker Baseball coming up in 30 minutes. Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Be there for Easter brunch. Be there for some golf with the weather being gorgeous. Can call up 402-434-5106 and find out about their membership pricing and benefits to be a member at Wilderness Ridge. Amazing golf, 27 holes. Brunch is tremendous, and yes, that deck with the sunset and a cold one is undefeated. I'm going to say that.
Nothing better.
Jay is back from Augusta. Shuey has been to Augusta many times, and I'm just still wanting the invite from either. And we just wrapped up talking Sergio's win.
Shuey gets in free. Well, just, you know, he's got to find, you know.
That's right.
You know, you just got to find a ticket. So, and I got to find a ticket. So, I can go sometime. You just got to make sure. You know, I'm not planning on winning the lottery every year, so I can.
No, I don't
guarantee you that.
No, no, it's okay. Listen, I'm really not hurt. I don't want to make this a big issue.
We want that tear away real quick.
Cut my mic, TJ. But Chewy, what's new with you though? Tell me about your weekend and into this week. How's the squad?
Good. We're getting ready to go play Big Ten Championship. So
love that.
Yeah, we leave next Wednesday. So I'm going to miss the show, unfortunately, but we'll be traveling.
Well, you don't know this. We're going with you.
All right. That'd be fun, actually.
So tell me about Big Ten Championship.
Well, in Cincinnati, we play at a TPC course out there. And so it's the first time they're playing the championship at this venue. So I know TPC courses pretty well, so it'll be awesome. It'll be an awesome golf course, awesome venue. So
Ohio State must be the host?
No.
Oh,
see, they
matter.
Can't. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
We've invited Cincinnati into the league.
That's right.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
That's within the footprint for them to play their championship.
Sure.
So
I didn't know if like the Big Ten just assigns, you know, host teams every year to.
No. See, that's the thing. You can only allow so many practice rounds on the golf course. If you get any practice rounds, that way no one gets an unfair advantage of being able to play. Like an Ohio State that's close could go over there and play the golf course a bunch. So they can't do that. So the playing field's pretty even as far as.
Hey, have you been watching? Have you seen any of that Jack special on Golf Channel at all?
No, I haven't seen any. I saw some of the highlights. It looks pretty impressive.
Yeah, I watched all. I just didn't know. I mean, we don't have time to get into it. I watched actually all three of them consecutive last night. Watched my little man. My mom was at work, so. God dang.
Pretty amazing.
No, it's insane. I mean, it's just crazy how. I mean, obviously, he knows he's the greatest player of all time, but how quickly he won. How many majors he won in his first couple of years? Five majors, I think, in his first 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
one of the things about him.
And he didn't even turn pro right away. He sold insurance for a couple years.
Yeah. So the most impressive thing about him is the number of seconds that dude's got.
19.
That's pretty amazing.
That's
19
nuts.
Seconds.
You know, you think, man, that many seconds. I mean, that is just one roll or one shot away from a guy winning 10 more times, possibly. Amazing.
How many years did he win multiple majors? That's another one. It was very impressive. You know.
You know, he was the. You know, Jack was obviously after Arnie, but he kind of started to bring the now golf into the limelight, man. Big, powerful guy, overpowered golf courses. But
playing, I always thought, like, you know, the purses for majors back then, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, $250,000. First place got like $45,000.
Yeah.
Which was sweet then, though.
But what he's won, like, over his career.
He's not even on the board, hardly.
No, he's still. It's not even close.
Chewy, we will talk to you soon, brother.
All right, man.
Hang out for us.
We'll.
Hour 2 coming up with Hail Varsity.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, Bob Dave!
Hey, Bob Dave!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get big, big!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmitz and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you. Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmitz, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer, Jay Moore, TJ Henning, producing, engineering, contributing, Mike Shuhart, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge. Chewy's hanging out. We don't let him leave, despite the fact he tries to make a bolt for it. Jake Schleppenbach is speaking of bolts. Jake Schleppenbach coming up. Husker baseball as Nebraska has gone 15-19. You love that. Iowa coming up. A win in the Little Apple last night. It was super hazy down there. I don't know how bad it is outside right now as we talk here in Lincoln. But there was kind of an air quality warning out again.
I smelt it this morning. I went outside.
So did I. I was dropping Carson off at school, and it's like I'm smoking in my backyard.
It smelled like a bonfire.
A little bit. So that's interesting. We do need to spend a second and acknowledge the passing. And I haven't seen many or any of his stand-ups, to be honest with you. But I do remember the Chappelle Show. And Charlie Murphy, let's take a few seconds here to remember the late brother of Eddie Murphy, Charlie Murphy.
Charlie Murphy!
Hold my drink.
Charlie Murphy!
Habitually, he's a habitual line step.
crap, crap, lies, fabrication. Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Thank you, Rick James. So
that's, I mean, that was a hell of a run.
That was
there. You want to talk about making, I mean, Chappelle probably made Charlie Murphy some money.
A little bit, but it was just
that run.
This grin from Charlie Murphy and the sketch. And should we, Chappelle Show guy or not?
I watched
it some,
yeah.
So you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I'm not labeling you. That, oh, Shuey, PGA, he's a Chappelle guy. TJ Henning never saw Chappelle.
Yeah, I've always wanted to. Was not allowed to in my house growing up.
So, okay, that's start there. That's understandable.
And I just found out Eddie, that's his brother.
Mm-hmm. They look like.
Hence the last name.
Did they ever. did they ever do a movie together?
No, their facial features are similar.
Were they not type brothers? Because, like, I saw Eddie in everything. Charlie wasn't in much, apparently.
No. Charlie was in the Navy. Okay. No, I know. They're brothers? Yes, they're brothers. But that's okay. They have the same mouth.
They look exactly alike.
Especially when they
smile.
Well,
now when I see it, they look alike.
It's a different laugh. Okay. But but you couldn't watch it.
Yeah. Parents didn't want me watching Chappelle Show growing up.
I respect the crap out of that. I totally do. But there are worse shows. They bleeped it at least.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, and that would have been your teen years, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think I was probably 9 or 10. Yeah, when it came out, okay. Right? Came out
in 2000. What show did Mom and Dad, like, shut you off from? Like, this is no crap. My dad would not, he would tape Oklahoma and Nebraska football games. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't beat Oklahoma, he would, like, erase over them with 60 minutes. I was never allowed to watch a Nebraska-Oklahoma loss.
I'm not kidding. I remember a time frame my mom wouldn't let me watch Beavis and Butthead on MTV.
My mom tried to, yeah.
But my dad thought it was hilarious, so we'd watch it together. So it was, you know, if mom's not around, we're watching MTV and watching Beavis and Butthead. That's like the only thing that I can remember my mom saying, no, you can't watch that. But that didn't last very long. I didn't have too many restrictions.
My dad tried to ban MTV.
Did he?
Tried. He tried to ban MTV, but eventually he just like, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my timing was always impeccable because, you know, Ice Cube would be doing a video and MTV would be on. And, what the hell are you watching? So, but other than that, like the one show I wanted to watch with them, but they told me no. This is 100 years ago. It's Knott's Landing because of Nicolette Sheridan. I mean, and Shuey right now is grinning. But that's it. How about you? Papa Shuey, anything you banned?
No, man. I was too old, man. No, they had shows like Leave It to Beaver on. You're going to ban
somebody? No, I'm talking. Is, no. There's three channels. What do you want?
Exactly.
I'm not piling on the age. I'm piling on, is there anything you banned from your son watching?
Well, I remember one. We're sitting around, and I had actually my mother-in-law, my son, and what the heck was that show that came on that had they're in Vegas and they had Mike Tyson in there in a cameo.
The Hangover?
The Hangover. Mm-hmm. The Hangover.
Really?
So the first Hangover, we're sitting there and my son, this is, I don't know, whatever the first
probably
year that
2008,
was.
2008, I
yeah.
remember.
2009, yep.
Yeah.
So it's on TV, unedited?
We're watching it on show, like pay-per-view.
Right, okay.
So now all of a sudden there's language and this and this, and they're going, maybe you shouldn't be watching this.
If mother-in-law with my mother-in-law. But did the mother-in-law, like, sitting next to you have the, man, I need to look like a good parent here?
Exactly. So it's like, it was a little uncomfortable going, oh, boy.
I also remember for Christmas vacation, my parents would ask me to leave the room during the pool scene or put, like, a blanket
really?
Over my head.
Oh,
yep.
Man. Oh.
You're deprived of so many great scenes,
man. TJ. We'll get on sports here in a second, but the last, remember, like, the Lethal Weapon. I thought I had made it because my folks let me watch a rated R movie with
mm-hmm.
them. And like, it was the first Lethal Weapon.
Was
like
OJ
first,
on those ones? Those ones yet?
That's Naked Gun.
No, Naked Gun. Oh, yeah. No. Different ones, that's right. Lethal Weapon with, yes. Okay.
Naked Gun's good, too.
Yeah. Naked Guns were great.
got him confused there for a second.
Heroin, Frank. The Lethal Weapon, like the first scene of the first Lethal Weapon was some like stripper jumping off the 18th floor. And I kind of looked at Dad because it was a nude scene. It's like, this is sweet. Love you, Dad. And my mom, like, got up, yelled at both of us, turned the TV off,
and that was
walked
it.
Upstairs. It was over. It was over. I blew it.
Lethal Weapon. Those are good movies.
Those were classics.
Those were great movies.
Those were great
movies.
Mel Gibson
and Danny Glover.
Yeah. Stumbling on to the fact that, okay, you're banned from watching this. And I get it as a parent, you need to. And I think Carson's, he's 10 going on 21. So if he wants to watch Ted, we'll watch Ted. If he wants to watch Family Guy, that's what Aaron, the bunnies, tried to ban.
South Park?
We don't watch much South Park, but he does get a kick out of South Park.
South Park's hilarious.
It's good. And South Park started my freshman year. That means I'm aging. Let's talk Nebraska football for a minute. Let's talk run game. And interesting thoughts and stats here with a write-up from Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, of course, does hot reads. And the topic of hot reads is, it varies, but it gets into to offense, running game. That's impressive. I like that. With the run game side of things, it's broken down by some of the football numbers guys. And, Jay, did you ever have something addressed to you by coaches when it came to, like, running opportunity? A title like that, was it ever that specific? And what I mean by that is that there are things that happen in the run game when a play is called. Mm-hmm. It's a neutral down, so it's first and 10. You can run or pass. And then there are plays. There are percentages of tendencies of formations, and then there's, down and distance. Are they going to run it? Are they going to throw to get the first down?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it's 4 yards or less, that is usually a rundown. It used to be a rundown. Now it's probably 3 yards or less is a rundown. And Nebraska didn't finish where they wanted to finish in Big Ten rushing. Their goal was third. They finished 10th. And how effective can Nebraska be at rushing the football? Well, with the run game opportunity, that depended on if your line blocked well enough for you to get 5 yards. And then what did Nebraska backs do after that 5-yard threshold? Well, surprisingly, Nebraska finished fourth in run plays with the O-line blocking to get you 5 yards. But the backside of that, Nebraska was very poor cumulatively with the backs in getting yards after that 5-yard threshold. I'm confusing the hell out of people. I'm not trying to do that. But that could be one of the reasons the want to run is there, but really when push comes to shove, the consistency part was what are the backs doing after the fact?
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at
those yak yards.
Yes.
Yards after contact.
Yards after contact or yards after you get an initial push to get you five. And then what do you do after it? So the backs that led Nebraska last year after that 5-yard threshold, Wilbon, 7 yards.
I feel like his numbers are a little skewed.
They are because
he had those big runs against Northwestern and some other games, but
a small sample size for him.
A small sample size, but you got Newby, you got Azigbo, you got Bryant. Of these four that are fighting for the majority of carries, clearly they'll go committee to start, and then if it weeds out, it weeds out. But of those four, I think Wilbon's the guy that can probably get you more yards after contact, after that first yard, just because I think he's shifty. I know Bryant's your guy, Tej, but I like Wilbon's ability maybe to stutter step a bit more.
Well, I think we all love his ability. It's just he doesn't get enough reps during the games, whether that be not working hard in practice or just not getting the opportunity in games. But, yeah, we've seen the flashes from Wilbon. There's no denying that.
And when you look at yards after that 5-yard threshold, highlight yards is what it's called. Newby's gone, so take him out of the equation. But Azigbo, this is what's plagued him a bit, and he's spoken about this, is not enough north-south, too much east and west. And then there's Bryant. And he averaged about 3.24 yards per carry after that 5-yard threshold. So it's an interesting number, though, with Nebraska. And you look at carries, that an offensive line does their job when they get you at least 5 yards for that rusher. The Bill Conley of SB Nation kind of put this together. It's an equation, but it's so scientific and mathematic oriented now. It's pretty cool to look at things like that. I like what Vogts did. But when you looked at Nebraska's offensive line, was it did it wasn't ever a question to me of like is the scheme sound? I thought it was. It came down to execution and talent level, and you're still seeing some inconsistency with the run game, at least through spring, and you're seeing some inconsistency with pass protection. You focus on one. Do you think Nebraska can feel okay about it? Riley said he's feeling better, but still, better's not great or good.
Well, yeah, I mean, some injury issues did not help out at all. Depth issues, guys called up, just not able to get it done, has a lot to do with it. But just sheer being physical at the point of attack, we were not. We are, my opinion, we are a very soft team at the point of attack, the O-line wise.
But see,
we do not establish that. We get knocked back too much. That's a lot of depth issues, not having guys with the talent. I mean, that can be, we talked about, you want to make that, what we talked about a couple segments before, that B student, but making them an A. You can do that. I mean, being physical, you can teach that. You can teach that. You can drill. I think they've done that more. You see the little clips that they put out, the football team does on Twitter and Instagram of, the Oklahoma drills, the old school. I love that. That's great.
No, they're doing more and more point of attack
physicality. You have to. This team needs it. You got to get more physical. It needs it. I think it has a lot to do with Diaco, too. I think Diaco's brought some of that physicality-ness, like, hey, we need to get after it more. Otherwise, I can't teach my guys how to play properly if we don't do it, which is great. Love it. But that's where this miss. I mean, it comes down to winning the line of scrimmage. It's the knockback. It's you don't have to overpower them. It's just you got to be able to create those creases, create the seams, get to the next level. And it's the timing has a lot to do with it. It's a back, hitting the hole at the right time, hitting it hard, or even sometimes the back can hit the hole too soon.
Sure,
you can kind of rush it a little bit. It can be a play call. It can be, you want to run. We like the stretch. We like the stretch. I mean, I love the stretch look, especially for a West Coast. Now, it's a different look, obviously, with Tommy in the run game. I think you're going to see more of a traditional under-center look, I think, with Lee in the future and be able to run some boots off of it. But, I mean, those can get knocked back because you got guys going east and west. Your linemen are. They can get, the edge can get set very easily on an offensive lineman like that, so it makes that kind of tough. But I just think you have to be physical up front. That's one thing you cannot sacrifice. You can say, it's not the right call, it's not this, BS. You in that line of scrimmage, you can do whatever you want.
I think they are making it a point to be more physical. You get a guy like Raritan that's going to challenge at the guard spot, and Conrad at center. Mm-hmm. They really like him. His motor's going. He is smart. He's confident, and he is. You got to beat him out now for that center spot.
I like this body. I mean, he's not a right tackle.
No.
This build is not a right tackle.
He's a really good football player that you got to get on
the field. I love our mentality now. We're trying to move best our guys around to get our best five on the offensive line or whoever. I love that mentality. Let's make some change. We've seen that with moving Kalu to safety, or you're just experimenting. I love that. Like, this is a time to experiment. So let's see how comfortable. And then if it doesn't work out, that's fine. He has plenty of reps at right tackle. Yeah, at least you tried. But I love that, doing something different. I mean, what's the insanity is keep doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. So I love them experimenting. That's what you got to do sometimes.
Well, we'll see if Wilbon can keep up this 5 yard yak number going.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HALE to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and @JMoore44 and @TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun.
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Huskers get a win in Manhattan last night. Senior second baseman out of Pius the 10th, Jake Schleppenbach with us. Jake, thanks for a few minutes. How you doing?
Yeah, you bet. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing all right. So you get ready and you head to the Little Apple yesterday and you get another win with Nebraska. I want to talk about how smoky was it. I was listening to the broadcast and I heard, you know, sunny and smoky outside. And I'm like, okay, I'm trying to picture this. The smoke coming northward has been in the news recently. How crazy were the conditions last night?
Yeah, it was a little hazy. I wouldn't say it was too crazy, though. I mean, we saw all the fires driving out there, the controlled fires along the way. Yeah, it was a little different, a little hazy for sure, but I mean, nothing too crazy.
Well, that's good to know. And you guys get another win. You got a hit last night. And how's this run been? Winning is fun, obviously, but you guys have taken 15 out of 19. And kind of take us through what it's been like for you.
Yeah, it's been good. Obviously, it's more fun when you're winning. That's just baseball. You're going to go through times where you're struggling and times where you're hot. And we seem to be hot right now, so hopefully we can just keep it going. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, everybody seems to be having fun at the field, and everything just seems to be kind of clicking right now, so hopefully we can keep that up.
What's been your approach this senior season? I mean, what were some goals you have in mind for the team, and what did you want to do? I mean, there's still lots of season left, mm-hmm. but you guys have seemed to have turned the corner and are on quite a roll. What did you want to kind of, as this is your last year with Nebraska, what did you want to help leave a mark with?
Yeah, I mean, tangible goals, team-wise, win the Big Ten, that's a big one for us. We haven't done that yet, and we think we have a really good shot to do that this year. Host, regional, that was a big goal from the start. So hopefully we can maybe get that one as well. Personal-wise, I just really want to enjoy this year. You know, last year, just have fun showing up to the field every day and enjoying the little moments with all the guys, your teammates. Yeah, and just trying to have fun every day at the field.
Jake Schleppenbach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at JSchlepp6 on Twitter. It's where you can follow him. You had a bit of power in Big Ten play, a big home run in the second game against Indiana, a 3-1 victory, and then a monster two-run shot Sunday against Maryland. You're a guy who makes contact. You've shown power going back in your career when I look at some of your numbers at Hutchinson, and you've been a contact guy now. Take me through that at bat. That was a big moment, a big pitch. And a great result for you against Maryland with that two-run shot to give you guys some breathing room.
Yeah, it came out a big time just in response to Maryland's two-run home run that half inning before, so that was big. But yeah, they just brought in a little sidearm lefty, and he just kind of hung a slider, and I put a good swing on it, and luckily it went out. So that was a big little two-run boost for us, and we were able to finish it out.
Did you know it as soon as you made contact?
I knew I hit it well, but the wind was blowing in pretty good. So I was just hoping it would get out and not blow back. So it was nice to see it go out.
Who was the first guy to greet you in the dugout after?
Well, Jesse was on base. So, I mean, he was right at the plate. So was Mojo for those guys. And then, I don't know, just everyone in the dugout was pretty pumped. So, I mean, that was fun.
With playing second base, it's been something you've kind of anchored for a long time at Nebraska. And is that something you've always played? Have you always been a second baseman through your baseball career? Is that something you shifted to at Nebraska? And what's your approach to playing second? What's kind of your mentality there as being part of the strength up the middle?
Yeah, well, first off, I played shortstop mostly all growing up through select ball. Once I got into high school, kind of made the switch over to second, played a little bit third. Junior college, mostly second, a few games at third as well. And then, yeah, Nebraska pretty much exclusively just at second. But, I mean, it's something I take pride in. Defense is something, you know, that you can not always control, but, I mean, for me it's kind of an effort and attitude thing. You know, just really grinding and trying to take charge of the infield and just taking pride in defense, and that's what win games is, pitching in defense. And I mean, it's something we really put a lot of effort and emphasis into.
Mentality wise, Coach Hurstad's given praise to the lower part of the order the last couple of times I've heard him talk, and obviously the top of the order get on base, the power guys do their thing, and then the bottom of the order needs to help produce too. He's mentioned that. I mean, it's a team effort, but 7, 8, and 9 in the order has been pretty good recently. And is it hard to go up there clear-minded? Has there been instances where you press? Kind of take me through your mentality as a hitter when you go up there. So each situation's different, I understand, but as a whole, how do you kind of approach your job?
I mean, just grinding out pitches and trying to win at bats. I mean, 1 through 9, I think we've done a pretty solid job of that throughout the year. Just increasing stretch pitches on the opposing pitcher and getting pitch counts up and ultimately getting them out of the game. So yeah, I think we've done a nice job of that 1 through 9 of just battling, especially with 2 strikes and, you know, trying to win each pitch. And that's something we really put a lot of emphasis on, is winning each pitch and getting to the next one, and ultimately at the bottom of the order, just trying to get on base and turn it over to the leadoff guy, Mojo, and, you know, the guys that really do a nice job of getting on base and driving in runs. So just setting up for them is a big part of my approach.
The grind is something that Coach Hurstad's talked a lot about. Was that something that was easy for you to adapt to, or was it a whole new type of grind when you got to college?
Yeah, you can say it was a grind getting into college. You know, and being down at the 9 hole, maybe a different kind of grind, not having the success you want. Yeah, just controlling the things you can control and playing solid defense, like I said, is a whole different kind of grind, when, especially when you're not hitting the way you want to. Yeah, just always going about your business in a way that's best for the team, and controlling what you can control, and attitude and effort and all that stuff. Yeah, it can be difficult at times, but, I mean, that's part of why baseball is great, and, I mean, that's why you play the game.
Tell me about your story getting to Nebraska, from Pius to Hutchinson to Lincoln. What were some of the factors that sent you down to Kansas and then got you back to Lincoln?
Yeah, well, I'd always wanted to play in Nebraska, obviously, growing up here. Out of high school, I probably wasn't ready to play Division I baseball. Looking back on it, deciding to go to Hutchinson for a year was probably the greatest thing I ever did. I learned a lot down there, got stronger, which was a big thing that I needed to do, and I did that. Matured a little bit as a baseball player, and then got the opportunity to come to Nebraska. So, I mean, it was a fun ride. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Hutchinson. Like I said, I got a lot better, and I think it was a really big learning experience for me as a ball player.
Couple more minutes. Jake Schleppenbach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, second baseman for Nebraska. Ben Miller, man, is just on fire. What's this guy eating?
I don't know what he's eating, honestly, but whatever he is, I think I want some of it. But, yeah, he's just unconscious right now, and, I mean, it's great. He's always been a pretty big part of what we do offensively, and maybe didn't have the greatest start to the season. Yeah, it's starting to turn for him, and it's really fun to watch. Every time he gets up to the plate, I always make sure to stop what I'm doing and pay special attention to him, because he's pretty fun to watch.
Did you guys all chip in for a cake or something for his birthday?
I don't know about a cake. I think Fisher got him something from the cookie factory, I think. So I think you brought him a cookie that might have done it for him.
Yeah, there you go. I won't ask if he shared, but, you know, there you go. Jake Schleppenbach is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Jake, what was it like for you growing up playing youth baseball and your time in Lincoln? A lot of listeners in Lincoln know about Pius Baseball, have followed you. And did you have a good time as a kid playing baseball in Lincoln?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that started with Rebels, and I think Rebels had a pretty special history with Alex Gordon and Jalba Chamberlain going there, and a lot of other great players. Tanner Lubach played for the Rebels. Yeah, I just really enjoyed that. Had some great coaches when I was young, and I carried on through high school at Pius, winning the first state championship my junior year in school history. So, yeah, I've always loved the game, and been pretty lucky with teams and coaches I've gotten, and support from teams, coaches, teammates, parents, family, friends as well. So, yeah, I've always loved the game, and I've been pretty blessed.
Is there a favorite you have in Major League Baseball, a player you really enjoy?
Yeah, Dustin Pedroia. I think he kind of embodies what it's like to be, you know, a second baseman, a middle infielder, someone that competes every day. I love the way he gets after the game. He just goes about his business, and I just think he's really fun to watch the way he gets after it.
All right, and going to end it with a Major League Baseball movie. Out of these three, your favorite, Sandlot, Major League, or Field of Dreams?
I would have to go with Major League, although Sandlot is definitely a classic, as well as Field of Dreams. But I think I would have to go with Major League on that one.
I think you're right. I think that's a good call. Jake Schleppenbach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at JSchlepp6 on Twitter, in Nebraska, Iowa this weekend. Jake, we'll catch up again. Best of luck. Thanks for a few minutes.
Yeah, you bet. Appreciate it.
Jake Schleppenbach, and he's going with Major League, A, B, or C. Do you have Sandlot? Do you have Major League? Do you have Field of Dreams? And he says, I am all over Major League. Be all over those pure-grown diamonds with Rick in Sauter Hayman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds. They're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean for you? Well, they still have beautiful characteristics like earth-mined diamonds. Many consumers think they're more beautiful. Go see for yourself. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, or also out west in Grand Island. And they're 10 to 40% off traditional earth-mined diamonds. Pure-grown diamonds exclusively at Sauter Hayman, Nebraska's proud dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Log on today, SauterHayman.com. Thanks to Jake Schleppenbach, a Jock Doc on the way with Hail Varsity Radio.
Our iPhone and Android apps. Get a new business number or keep your current one. Forward your calls to any phone and even get your voicemails transcribed. Join over 250,000 small businesses who stay connected with Grasshopper. See how it works at grasshopper.com, the entrepreneur's phone system.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
I'm great, Chris. How you doing?
Doing okay, man. It is that time of year. So many teams and so many programs doing spring football. And, of course, you have NBA cranking up, too. And there's always that nasty knee injury around the corner that you read about or hear about this time of year. Let's talk ACL injuries. And Dr. Brandon, specifically, yeah, I mean, ACL's common, but when it comes to the work you guys got to do to repair it and then the recovery to it, it's still one of those injuries that really can knock an athlete back a ways, isn't it?
You know, it absolutely is. You know, despite all the, you know, great technology, great techniques we're doing, you know, obviously, I don't like to use the term minimally invasive surgery, but more kind of arthroscopic surgery that we're doing, less trauma to the patient. Athletes are different. You know, when you have your ACL done, it does change you as an athlete. I think those return to play rates are still pretty high, but I think if you watch those athletes back out there in the field, that most of them are a bit different, maybe not quite as fast as they were before, maybe can't quite, you know, cut to the same level. Whether that's truly a physiological aspect of just the changes in the function of that knee, or is it more, you know, a mental aspect, that's kind of difficult to assess that in some ways. But yeah, you know, definitely very common. Again, we're great at fixing those things, but, you know, as an athlete, it's a long recovery and a difficult one for sure.
Based on some Google info here, more than 200,000 cases a year, Dr. Brandon.
Yeah, pretty amazing number. It'll be interesting as they continue to, you know, data bank those and see how that number, unfortunately, is going up, especially with just the intensity and the level of, you know, lower level sporting activities in the younger kids. It'll be interesting to see how that changes. Unfortunately, I think that number is really going to balloon.
ACL, our topic, and Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. With the ACL, are you seeing more ACL injuries due to contact or non-contact? What are you seeing?
I see more non-contact, and I think if you look at the national statistics on that, you'll see that non-contact injuries, typically account for quite a bit more. I think that one stat I saw was almost two-thirds of those are non-contact injuries. I do think, obviously it varies, on the sports. Places like soccer, I think there's probably more contact type of injuries, yeah, especially in the female athletes. But you'd be surprised with, your football and your wrestlers. A lot of times, especially football, it really is a high number of non-contact type injuries that create these problems.
When it comes to your job, after it's been diagnosed, we'll start there. Let's tell me how you diagnose an ACL, and then a step further, the reconstruction process that you do and the healing you provide.
Sure. So from a diagnostic standpoint, history is always important with these. So, what the athlete tells you, what's the mechanism of injury, how did they land, how did they cut, what did it feel like, was there a pop, immediately did you have instability, where is the pain located? Those are some things that we kind of look for that key us into the injury itself. But again, key things that are, I planted and twisted, felt a pop, knee gave out, that's kind of the classic story. Of course, if you're sitting up in the stands, you see the injury where somebody's knee just gets crushed and that becomes more obvious. But most of the time, that's not the event that occurs. And so then we get them in the clinic here, or we have, fantastic athletic trainers working for us that will see the athlete on the field. There's a couple of specific exam maneuvers you can do. If you catch them early, the symptoms really haven't set in yet, so you can kind of get a better feel for some of those tests. Before their knee really swells up or their hamstrings get real tight. One of the tests we always do if patients or athletes are reading online, it's called the Lockman's exam. You'll see when you watch games on TV where the athletic trainer, team doc, will kind of get their hands around the knee and stabilize the thigh or the femur above the knee, and then they'll kind of grasp the tibia, the shin below the knee. And really what they're doing is they're stabilizing the thigh, and they're trying to see if they can pull that shin or that tibia forward. And it's that forward translation that's kind of simulating what the ACL should prevent. And so typically as you're feeling that on a Lockman's exam, you can get the athlete to relax. The ACL's out, you'll see that tibia or shin kind of really translate or pull forward, and it kind of gets to a point where it's kind of what we call a soft endpoint instead of a hard infeel, where you pull it forward and it feels like a big clunk or a stop, which means the ACL would be okay. That's probably our real go-to test. There's a couple others that are more specific we do in the clinic. So we go from there, do the exam, get the history, and then what's really important too is MRI. I think MRIs are really valuable. Clearly they can show you if the ACL tear is there, although we have a really good idea if it's there before we get there. But I like MRIs more for looking at the other stuff, like tearing in the meniscus, injuries to the cartilage, injury to the collateral ligaments. All those kind of things are really important for essentially planning in the future for, a procedure to help the athlete.
The surgery, the part you do to fix the ACL, kind of take us through your routine and how you go about it.
Sure. The biggest thing that patients or athletes will ask us is, what type of graft are you going to do? So the big issue with ACLs is you can't sew an ACL back together. There's been good studies that show that this doesn't heal, especially in older individuals. And so we have to reconstruct the graft. And so we need to make that from something. And so typically we'll use your own tissue. So we'll borrow some tissue from, say, your patella tendon, which that's the tendon that's between your kneecap and the top of the shin. That's kind of one of the gold standards, been used forever, great graft, but it does have some drawbacks to it. You can also use your hamstrings kind of on the inside of your leg, and you can use those to recreate the graft. We'll have a discussion with patients about, which one that they might think they prefer. I'm a big fan of using hamstring grafts for the simple reason if you take a hamstring, you're not really going to have to deal with the issues of knee pain in front of the knee. Typically, when you use some of the patella grafts or the graft in front of the knee, about 20-25% of patients may have some pretty significant knee pain there associated with where that graft came from. And so we like to try to avoid that and use hamstring grafts. Certain athletes, we definitely think about different graft choices for certain athletes. So, for example, if you're a female athlete or a jumping athlete, they tend to not be very happy with patella grafts. Again, that's not everybody. And so those athletes, we tend to definitely migrate more towards a hamstring graft. So that's the big discussion. The point that I would make is I'm a big fan of using your own tissue. There's a big push out there with the cadaver grafts, using it from, you know, donated tissue. Makes great sense. Logically, it sounds great because you're not creating morbidity or trauma to the patient. But they've been studied extensively. In fact, the big ACL study going on now is called the Moon Study. It's a big multi-center study that's looked at all different types of ACL grafts. They actually stopped using cadaver grafts early in that study because the failure rate was so high. Mm. And so I don't like to use those in young athletes. I think it's a very poor choice. I think they do not very well at all. They loosen up. And I think when you, you know, most sports docs doing a bunch of high-level ACLs don't do those because the results are very poor. And so I definitely try to steer athletes away from that because I think it's a poor graft choice. So those are the big things we talk about. So then, of course, we go through the procedure. And then the other things that are becoming more important with ACLs is really what else happened with the injury. Do you have a meniscus tear? Do you have a cartilage injury? Those things are really key. There's actually a really fascinating study that they did in the NFL that looked at athletes with ACL tears only, just meniscus tears only, and then ACL with meniscus tears. They found that athletes who had meniscus pathology added on top of, whether it's ACL meniscus or just meniscus, actually had a shorter career in the NFL, which is very interesting, as opposed to just a straight ACL. So the meniscus does play a substantial role and does create a lot of morbidity for you. And so that's another big discussion we have is, can we fix your meniscus or do we have to just clean up the tear? That's the big discussion you have. And unfortunately, that's something that really is a decision you kind of make in the operating room, depending on where the tear is, what it looks like, and if there's good blood supply. Or MRIs are not quite good enough to kind of predict repair versus not. But I would say we're becoming more aggressive with fixing meniscuses, mainly because of the some of the equipment and stuff that we have now. So that's kind of the discussion that we have, which is an extensive one. But those are kind of the big questions that come to light when athletes come into the clinic to talk about these.
Dr. Brandon, thanks for taking a few minutes today.
Sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
Have you heard about ADRC Nebraska? It's the Aging and Disability Resource Center serving all Nebraska.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay.
Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
One final time on a Wednesday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Thanks to Mike Schuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Husker Golf, and Jake Schleppenbach, Husker second baseman. Tomorrow on the program, Lars Anderson, native Lincolnite, Bleacher Report. Great story on Bleacher Report about the number of Sudanese kids that are in Omaha that, you know, the names that have been tremendous basketball players in the Omaha metro area. Bleacher did a great story on those kids and their story. So we'll catch up with Lars tomorrow. Former Husker defensive lineman Steve Vorn, Big Dreams Weekend. Steve and his foundation going strong for, gosh, what is it, 13, 14 years now for Steve Horn and the Dream Foundation, Big Dreams Week. We'll get caught up with Steve. We'll talk to him about Mick. He tutored Mick at the Warren Academy, so we'll get Steve's thoughts on Mick in this spring game. Then Andy Janovich, the Pride of Gretna. And, you know, he's a fan favorite in Denver, the Denver fullback, Husker fullback. Andy Janovich will be with us tomorrow, too. And Jano is going to be at the locker room, 9 to 11, correct, on Saturday.
Yes, yep, 9 to 11, signing autographs. $10 for one autograph, $25 for three.
Okay,
so it's a deal. Remember that. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
So he'll be over there, and if you're in Lincoln, 56th and Alamo Center is where the locker room is located, Highway 2. If you're coming into town and you get here a little early, hit the locker room and go see Andy Janovich. And if Jaybird's there, wave at Jaybird. So that's what we can do. Yay or nay? Thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you believe, Jay Moore, on Richard Sherman? Is he on his way out in Seattle?
No. What's the talk? You got to refer. I haven't seen this. So what did you just read? What did you find out?
It's just a matter of trade value right now. They'd move him if they could get something beyond just a first round pick from him for him. Because he's blasted his head coach, he's blasted his coordinator, he's blasted his position coach. On field.
He's damn good.
During games, he's 29 and you owe him $22 million. 2 years left on his deal.
He's almost 30. Yeah.
You know how the game works.
No, I do. I do. I know. Trust me, I do.
It's time to go out in the field, old Yeller. You're pushing 30.
It's hard.
That's the breakdown.
It's be hard to trade for and someone get taking that $22 million on. That's the tough part.
Taking the $22 million on and departing a first rounder. Because you'll need to get – that's where Seattle's pumping their brakes is they want some sort of value.
Right. Well, I need to look deeper into this. You know, I don't know secondary-wise.
New Orleans is dead. They need help in the secondary.
Yeah.
Would you get rid of him, though? I'm saying the reason
if he's a pain in the ass, if he's a pain in the ass and you have someone behind him or you know you can get someone in the draft, absolutely. If he is, he sounds like he does. I mean, he's lost his mind. He likes to hear himself talk too much. Simple as that. If he's a pain in the ass, man, and you can find someone to do his job, and even for cheaper, I'd kick him to the curb.
Can you get someone to do his job half as well as him is the question. Because when he wants it, he's untouchable.
Oh, yeah, you can't throw this side of the field.
And he tackles. He's not a wuss corner.
But the thing is, his long frame, man, those are hard to come by.
Yeah, well, there's your value question.
Correct.
So, do you trade him?
No.
All right. It is spoken.